I appreciate Andre giving me those wonderful accolades. But the gentleman that I'm getting ready to introduce to you is the reason that young, innovative people like myself can go on to be game changers in this rust world that we call life. But I want you to know that the NAACP is moving forward unfettered, unafraid, undeterred, and moving forward together. Repeat after me. We're moving forward unfettered, unafraid, and determined, moving forward together. This afternoon, I introduced to you someone that I've been watching for a long time, someone that's been a rock in a weary land. They talk about Normandy Superintendent and Dr. McNichols. I think you're doing a wonderful job. But let me tell you about somebody that's been under attack. Somebody that still performs his job while people are looking down his throat. I'm about to tell you about somebody that probably understands that politics can be something else. But I want you to understand that the NAACP is not the oldest and the boldest, the most cussed and discussed, the most feared and revered organization for nothing. The NAACP is a fan of people that stand up for affordable, quality education in your local neighborhoods. So I want you to understand, as Dr. Ben Hooks used to put it, to hell with those people that think they're gonna turn us round. We want you to understand here today that we stand behind, right now, and yeah, I said it, behind Dr. Art McCoy. I don't know what he's going in. I don't know. You know, tomorrow is his closed meeting with the Board of Education. And they can say whatever they want. They can say he didn't do this. They can say he didn't do that. But the God that I serve stands with the just. The arc does bend towards justice. And so I don't know if you'll be unemployed tomorrow. I don't know if you won't have a job. I don't know if they're gonna try to lie on you, say you stole, say what you did not do, but I want you to know that you got five letters standing behind you, the most powerful letters in the name of civil rights standing behind you. So I don't know what's gonna happen. I'll pray for you tonight, and I want everyone to do that. I don't know what's gonna happen to you because politics is something else. They'll lie on you. They'll say you didn't do this. You didn't do that for trying to stand up for some kids that don't look like them. Our branch met with the Board of Education, and if you want me to be perfectly honest with you, it sounds like good old BS. So I want you to know a little something about Dr. Art McCoy. He's an educator. He's a husband. He's a father, he's a friend. The youngest superintendent in the history of the state of Missouri. He's an innovator, he's a bridge builder, he's a communicator, he's a conciliator, but most of all, he's a team player. He's someone that's a believer in strong public schools in your neighborhood. He believes in using his position of power to be of service and influence to those who are downtrodden. What I like about him is he doesn't get tied up in mess and politics. And as you can see what happened, that might be a consequence of trying to be Christ-like. Okay. He serves on many boards. One board in particular is the Urban League of Metropolitan St. Louis. He's a graduate of Harris Stowe State University. And a big award that he wanted me to tell you about was he received the 2013 Profile of Courage, Profile of Change Leadership Award from the United States Chamber of Commerce. I want you to stand up on your feet like the NAACP stands for public school education, affordable quality schools, and stand and welcome Dr. Art McCoy to deliver our keynote address.
You may be seated. I want to say, preach, John, preach. You know, after that choir got up and sung, God of my weary years, God of my silent tears, thou who have brought us this far along the way. And then they said, Jesus be a rock, a rock. And then John just got it started with some good word there. I want to just sit myself down and say, amen, brother. Amen. But I'm going to start off by saying a scripture that's near and dear to all of us, and me particularly right now. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Who shall I fear? The Lord is the strength of my life. For whom shall I be afraid? Now, this is the part I like. When the wicked and even my enemies and my foes came up against me, what did they do? They stumbled and fell. When they came to eat my flesh, what happened? They stumbled and fell. So I'm going to let you know right now, there's not going to be a hearing tomorrow because God is working right now. There is no hearing on the 24th because God is working right now. And even when our enemies come to eat our flesh, they stumble and they fail. Let me give honor to God, who is the head of my life. Let me give honor to this great woman next to me, the president of this organization, someone I love, Esther Haywood. Thank you for being a soldier in the midst of some troubling times. And to John Gaskin, who's a leader among leaders. His trajectory is so bright that we can't even trace the end of it. Thank you for being an old soul in a youthful package. To my wife of 20 years, and I got married at 17 because I was a minister first, and I am a man of God, and I said, I'm going to go and find a good wife, and the man that findeth a good wife findeth a good thing. The best decision in my life, my wife, Belinda. Thank you, honey, for walking with me. And my sister, Rosalind McCoy, someone who's been with me since I was 2, telling me what to do and making sure it was the right thing to do. Someone I love, someone I'm close to, and someone who is a rock for me and an educator at Clayton School District. Thank you, Rosalind. I love you, sister. To all the dignitaries here, I give honor to you and send you greetings. And to my friend who's receiving an award among many of the friends, to Deborah, who I serve next to, God bless you for your labor of love and your true passion and commitment. We love you, sister. Keep on keeping on and do even more in retirement. I want to move straight into my text because I have a lot to say, but it's going to be quick. As we celebrate the 220th anniversary of St. Louis, we've come a mighty long way. And John asked me to be the keynote to speak truth to power. So I'm going to attempt to do that, speak truth to power. And we've come a long way, but we have yet far to go. In this very place, slaves were sold on the steps of this old courthouse, the old courthouse actually, and the courthouse of Missouri. In 1820, up until the Civil War, the law prohibited blacks as well as some whites, indentured servants, and anyone in between from being able to read. They were jailed, they were fined, and some blacks were hung for taking a book or a dictionary. We had separate but equal schools shortly after that, and we overcame those things. We overcame through the Dred Scott case, which we heard of, and other people that were soldiers. But then we moved to a period of separate but equal. Separate but equal facilities, black codes. And that, we overcame. We are currently overcomers. In St. Louis, we moved to housing rules and red dressing that made segregated homes and living, and voting rights suppression and unemployment. And we overcome, and we're continuing to overcome that. And currently, we're in a state where we have school-to-prison pipelines based off of illiteracy, because in the state of Florida and Texas, third grade and fourth grade test scores are used to predict how many jail cells to build. And in Missouri, we have a comparable track, and we have school closures based off of accreditation. We have layoffs of educators based off of performance and suppression of leaders in successful systems for leaders who are not sustainers of status quo. It takes courage to be a true educator today. We have suppression of leaders who are status quo enders, bridge builders. And I say today, we shall overcome that. Now, as the great-great-grandson of former slaves, I'm the great-great-grandson of former slaves and the grandson of indentured servants and the son of parents who were born in 1933 and 4, of individuals that did not go to college, but they made the most of what they had, and they became business owners and ministers. My dad is a pastor of a church, Grace Apostolic Church, where I'm a minister as well. And my mother is a daycare founder and owner. And they made sure they taught me two valuable things. Education is important, and that each generation must do better than the previous one. Get an education and do better, because the school of hard knocks is one in which you must learn through suffering. But if you get an education, you can make the lives of everyone better. Now, I want to say in honor of Rosa Parks, and I'm going to talk a little bit about Rosa Parks, but my charge and question to you today is, who is your Emmett Till? Who is your Emmett Till? Now, we see an image of Rosa Parks often depicted in school and elsewhere of a docile woman who refused to give up her seat on a segregated bus in Montgomery, Alabama in 1955 because her feet were tired after a hard work of long days of work, and basically she just wouldn't move. But there's much more to Rosa Parks than that, much more. She's the mother of the civil rights movement. And on that day in which she was arrested for not giving up her seat, she was asked, why did you do it? What gave you the courage? What gave you the passion? And she said, Emmett Till. Emmett Till fueled her. A few months earlier than December 1955, Emmett Till was slain. He was killed August 28, 1955. And that incident made truth to power real through the opening of his casket by Mammy Till to make the whole world see and make transparent some dishonesty and made very visible truth to all the powers that be. The actual funeral is on YouTube, and I've showed it to over 20,000 students of white men and black men and white women going to Pilgrim's Progress Church, and Martin Luther King was in the midst, and white clergy passing out as they got to the casket, because the truth to power was that real and the transparency to dishonesty is that real. Go Google it. If you haven't seen it, see it. It's something that will change your life. And Rosa Parks said her life was changed because she was affected at the core because of that murder. It gave fuel to her fearlessness. And she signed on to what Mammy Till said, which is, I have no time to hate, but we must fight injustice everywhere and spend the rest of our lives doing so. The NAACP stated, and at that time, one of the operatives, Ms. Moore, considered Emmett Till to be the starter of the civil rights movement. And his casket is still laid in the Smithsonian building of the National Museum of African American History and Culture so that it can make one stop and pause and reflect. Who is your Emmett Till? Now let me go back to the woman that said, this is what fueled me. Rosa Parks had been fighting for bus segregation for many years up until 42 when she actually refused to get up. In addition to bus issues in the city, she fought against sexual assault. And I have to remind children of this because it's not taught in books. It's not in the books that we use. She was a part of the NAACP. She actually helped a young man by the name of Jeremiah Reeves to avoid the electrocution chair and fought for a few years to do that unsuccessfully in the end when he passed away on March 28, 1955. But beyond that, her heroes were Malcolm X. Her grandfather was a Garveyite that was too light-skinned to be accepted in the Garvey movement because Garvey was about my complexion. I'm a dark man. Her mother was a school teacher. They all described her as a teen that nobody messed with. She was looked at as militant. She was frustrated because of the miseducation that she was given. Her mother took the means to send her to a school by Mrs. White that was an industrial school, a school of trade beyond sixth grade, which was unprecedented for women at that time. And Mrs. White, who was white, was hated for it, as well as the blacks who attended it. The school was attempted to be burnt down and all kinds of strife. She was known to be someone who got very upset about the injustices of individuals against herself, women, and people of color. She stood up, she spoke up, and she showed up. Her school friend, Mary Fair, who left school, the same school with Mrs. White, and went on to college, actually started the Women's Council, the Women's Political Council, which instigated the 382-day boycott that was successful. Amy Fair, her classmate, sent the materials out. She had a philosophy that was in common with Malcolm X, Queen Mother Moore, NAACP organizers Ella Baker, Martin Luther King, and her husband, Raymond Parks, by which she bears the last name. She was so powerful that in the midst of the Katrina incident, if we recall, the president used her iconic figure and nature to bring her to the rotunda and have her be seen as a means to earn some points back to the nation for his neglect and the governmental neglect of the actions in Katrina. When she passed away at 92. So who is your Emmett Till? Who is your Rosa Parks of today? What is the situation that's stimulating and fueling your fight? Blacks and whites like Ms. Parks were publicly defied, and whoever defied the status quo, they were publicly ostracized. They were economically intimidated, as was stated by Mr. Stinger, did not have jobs. The husband did not have jobs because they were locked out. Montgomery, like some other places then, and even maybe now, viewed themselves as more sophisticated than to take physical violence on people. So they said, we will fire you, demoralize you, and make sure that you remain in a lower class. She tried to fight to desegregate schools, but started with the libraries after the issues of not being able to desegregate the schools at that time. And she said she was discouraged by the empathy on the part of our people. That fuels me. She was discouraged by the empathy, the lack, the indifference of our people, the lack of empathy. She was discouraged by the apathy on the part of our people and many people, the apathy. So, truth to power became the mass weapon of destruction for the fear and the ignorance. And she dedicated her life to it. So I asked myself the question, so why would the NAACP invite a superintendent who's on administrative leave, I like to call it a suspended superintendent, to be the keynote speaker? Was very clear. Who is your Emmett Till? First, I said, let's define what suspended means. It means to cause to stop temporarily someone's authoritative power or responsibility. But we know as civil servants and as NAACP and as individuals who fight for rights, we are givers. We operate in influential power all day, every day, and authoritative power is a blessing from God, but we are trying to influence our community in the best way possible. Each one of you in here are influential leaders because you carry in your heart a burden, regardless of your position, to make your place a better space and make your space a better place. No suspension can stop that. Webster's Dictionary goes on to define, what is a suspension? It's something that hangs free on all sides, suspended in air, minus or excluding a point of support. What is this? You are the point of support. Suspend me any day from the enemy. Take me any day to the place of a point of support. Make me free to be the leader that we need to be in our community today, any day. Because when we have deaths of our children and prison pipelines, I don't play politics. I'm about our children all the time. With my friend, my foe, with the commissioner, with whomever, with my brother, Ty, who I went to college with, it's truth always, despite the consequences. It's a blessing to be suspended, to be free on all sides except the one providing support. You're free as soon as you're willing to be suspended from it. We're free, and we will be more free once we suspend ourselves from stinking thinking. And that's why years ago, I've said we are in a war. We're in a war against ignorance. We're in a war against ignorance. And I've always claimed that we were in that war, and I've always claimed to not be the general, but to be the soldier. I make sure that I know all 13,000 of the children in Ferguson, Florida, and then some. The children in Hazelwood, the children in Normandy, the children in Riverview, the children in the city of St. Louis. I speak, I go there, I touch the hands of the adults, but most importantly, our children. Because as these children said, that we're going to have peace on earth, and that that peace will begin with me. They said it out of the mouths of babes. And when we can understand that what we do until the least of these, suspend me, because I'm going to be free to represent the best of who we are. And I'm not afraid of the allegations and the comments and the conversations, because those who have touched somebody know somebody. And those who I've worked with know a person, so that the accusations and things that are said are just like noise that bloweth away in the wind. Sometimes good wishes are good. Sometimes well wishes are good. Sometimes goodwill is good. But sometimes you need a soldier to fight. And soldiers know that they're going to have some people shooting at them. That's what we signed up for. That's the type of superintendent and leaders we need. So it wasn't by coincidence that I had a job description for myself to raise $1 million a year. 3, 4, 5, 6 times my salary, because we have to raise the capital to give the capital back. It wasn't a coincidence that we employed 200 11th graders and 12th graders at $8 to $10 an hour every year with that money that AT&T gave. They gave checks through Inspire, through Emerson, which gave checks, $100,000 checks year after year. This is not coincidental. This is economic empowerment. And when economic empowerment happens, I say, ain't nobody mad but the devil. Because that's what it takes to provide for your family. The March on Washington was about jobs and justice. And when we provide a means to jobs, which is education, training, and equality, that's justice. So why talk about truth? Well, truth is important to talk about, and John started this with me. He's like, Art, you're the truth to power speaker. I was like, I'm gonna run with that, brother. Truth is important because knowledge is power. And proximity to power, if you get close to someone in power, then it makes you more powerful. It empowers. Transparency to dishonesty is important because with transparency, it brings clarity, understanding. We are able to see our way, and we're able to see what we believe and believe what we see. That's why we're demanding and asking for transparency about what you're doing, why you're doing it, who you're doing it to, and not on our watch. You can't do this to our people, and especially not to our children. That's what real men and women say. If you're not saying it, then I want you to ask yourself if you are a real man and woman. I have soldiers and generals right here, right now, that teach and work in school systems that have people staring down their throat as we speak, saying, do not wear a T-shirt that says E4 for excellence and equity every day. It doesn't even say anything about Dr. Roy. It just says it about E4. And those individuals have to say, please, not on my watch. I'm all about excellence and equity in education every day. Because that's what a real man or woman does. They're not afraid. They speak the truth. They make it transparent. They tell somebody. They do something. They show up. This is important. It's so important. One of my first speeches to the teachers union was this. I appreciate the applause for being the youngest superintendent in the state, the first African-American superintendent of Ferguson, Florissant School District. But I said, more importantly, whenever you bust through a glass ceiling, I've never seen anybody jump through a ceiling and not get cut. So the question is, which side of the cutting are you going to be on? Are you going to be on the side of the cutting? Thank you, sweetheart. Are you going to be on the side of the cutting that helps to heal and help someone, or are you going to be on the side of the cutting of the hurting and the hating? Each one of us has to ask which side of the cutting we're going to be on. That's what Rosa Parks said. I refuse to just let it be in my soul. I'm going to take a stand by sitting down and make something change. And as I finish, I want to make sure that I keep it very real by sharing with you a poem that I wrote that's on that line. Which side will you be on? This poem I wrote actually in 2005 after Katrina, and I updated it just for you today. Do you see me? Why is there no united front or unified fuss? Because the impact is infectious, yet we fail to mobilize a movement in us in the U.S. Give me liberty or give me death. Well, Patrick Henry said it, and he got both. While the rest of us here, it seems like the latter is the only one available to us. Do you see me? Must I put you to the test? Do you see me? There's 600 million impoverished children, and we have to give them our best. Do you see me? There's 1.4 million minorities in prison and 2.5 individuals in the penal system in America, the most. Do you see me? What else will it take to seize the true enemy? Do you see me? Or will it take more than a 25% gap in the majority to minority unemployment rates? Do you see me? Or will it take more than 50% of children to drop out of high school in urban and rural schools to truly teach job skills after grade 8 and to truly educate and to truly fund parents as teachers and universal pre-K? Do you see me? Or will it take 3 or 4 more school districts to disintegrate? Reacting to one school district closure already is already too late. This shows that the impact is infectious, but yet we fail to mobilize a movement in us and in the U.S. Despite no voice, but through horrific actions, they all speak. Maybe as if things get worse, we will move past our fear and kill the enemy. Ignorance, soft bigotry, poverty, indifference, and hate. Fight it if you dare, because there's no need to procrastinate. But many won't, because the impact is infectious, and it fails to mobilize a movement in us in the U.S. 9/11's impact on America made the world change, and the reaction to U.S. troops in Iraq and more than 2,000 broken families and lost friends, it affected us. And 4 years later, New Orleans, Chocolate City, became Katrina's adopted baby. And some blamed it on Mother Nature. But the truth is, what made it worse is the oppression, suppression, and government neglect and racism. And even in 2012, after Trayvon Martin's death, many of us wanted justice. Some of us even wanted revenge. But the sad reality is that as long as this is possible for our children, none of us are safe in America, and it prevents any amends. It does. So killers, cagers, and hateful politics, flaws of jurors and justice, they're also public. And all these events have changed the way of life for the entire republic, because the impact is infectious, yet the love of money, strong status quo sustainers, minds of mediocrity, a lack of morals, and a lack of love for humanity halt our mobilizations and movement within us, the U.S. So this is why I charge you today to commit to the task of knowing who is your Emmett Till. Have the willpower and the drive to, if you know something, say something, and then do something. Say enough is enough and speak your truth. Take divine action despite the cost. And if we do that, not only will we overcome, but we shall be more than conquerors. Thank you.